You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Monday, June 15th, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is Tim Ma-fucking Geddes.
It's a big day, Bless. It's such a big day, I can't wear a hat.
Whoa. Oh, you gotta let it loose.
The big hair out, baby. It's
oh my God.
We're feeling good. We had the best pre-show we've ever had going into this. Me, you, and
it's one of those ones where I wish we recorded it. I wish we recorded it because legit, like, one of the funniest things.
We'll share some of the moments with them coming up. It's going to be fun.
Dude, let's get into the show because we got some things to talk about. Of course, today's stories include WB Games being up for sale, the final clarification on smart delivery, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping, thank you to everyone who watched the Guerrilla Collective this weekend. We teamed up with Media Indie Exchange to showcase nearly 90 games, and y'all came out to support, so thank you guys again.
It was awesome.
Yeah, dude. Like, I tuned in for day one and day two, and I couldn't tune in for day three because day three is literally happening as we speak.
It's literally happening. Day three is like a deeper dive into demos, and like, it's like a live stream of them actually playing the games and talking to the devs and stuff. So
yeah,
you can go check that out if you want.
But yeah, of course, I believe
stay with us.
Are there, and this might be a Greg question, but are there VODs available for day one and day two? Because like, I'm sure people want to go check those out.
I'm sure they're available on Twitch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure they're Twitch VODs for sure. I'm sure people also co-streamed, and so maybe you can find those also. But highly, highly, highly recommend you check out Guerrilla Collective, because there are some great, great games that were showcased. And we'll get to those later, actually, because there are some questions written in about those. But also for housekeeping, the finale to Nick's playthrough of The Last of Us is up right now on youtube.com/kindafunnygames. And I know that's been a struggle to get uploaded, but I believe everything is good now, as far as I'm
it's
aware,
good.
As far as I know.
The entire game, from beginning to end, is online in two parts on youtube.com/kindafunnygames. Thank you all for your patience. Definitely one of the most frustrating editing projects I've ever had to have anything to do with. But it's up. It's live. People are enjoying it. And they hate the way Nick plays. So, hey, there you go.
Hey,
there's no way.
There you go. There you go. Also up on youtube.com/kindafunnygames is our core games Let's Play, where we reveal the winners of the Kinda Funny Game Jam. We've been talking about it for weeks now. Of course, the core game stream got delayed because things going on in the world. But it finally happened, and the winners are revealed. So go check that out again on youtube.com/kindafunnygames. We have cool friends today. Is Elizabeth Tolick. That's Lois from Superman and Lois on the CW. Of course, Greg is going to be interviewing her. That's happening right after this on Twitch and later on youtube.com/kindafunny. And that was actually one of the things that we brought up.
That was the thing. Before the show went live, we wanted to make sure that we were pronouncing her name right. So we were Googling like how to pronounce her name. Her name is Elizabeth Bitsy, is what she goes by, Tulloch. And I found an interview that said that. So I was like, Bless, that's how we say it. Bless just YouTubed how to pronounce Elizabeth Tulloch, put it in there. And this is the video we found.
Oh, can you hear it?
No, Kev's prepping it.
You won't be able to hear it. So,
oh, damn.
I mean, I can. Okay. If you give me a second, I can switch it over. It's just one of those things.
Yeah, switch it over.
Switch it over. We need this back in our lives.
Yeah,
because it is one of the funniest things I think I've ever heard.
It's one of those things where like everybody's been in that situation where they don't know how to pronounce a word. I've been in that situation plenty of times, as people who listen to these podcasts probably know. And so like you do the thing where you look up how to pronounce a word on YouTube or on Google, and this is the video that popped up. Is it ready now, Kevin?
Yeah.
Bite size too large.
And like, I was not expecting that at all.
Click on the peanut butter. How do you say peanut butter?
Peanut booty. Peanut booty.
As soon as I clicked it, I was like, why does it sound like Nick Scarpino specifically is playing a trick on me? Like, that sounds like a Nick Scarpino joke.
Chayu gagu chayu. Boonagoonga. Mayu.
Oh, Lord.
Kept getting pop up. We can give this guy a shout out.
Yeah, what channel? I clicked the Crippling Depression one. That one also killed me.
Oh man, dude, that was insane.
Well, you guys can't see it for whatever reason, but it's Run for the Cube.
Run for the Cube on YouTube. God, I really needed that laugh this morning because I was not expecting that. I was legit thinking I was gonna learn how to pronounce Tulik, and I clicked that and I got
too loud.
The funniest thing I ever heard in my life.
All right, let's talk about some video games.
Of course, still in housekeeping though, EA Play is happening Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific time, and we'll be reacting to it live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. That'll also be up on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, so stay tuned for that. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Mohammed Mohammed, Connor Nolan, and Blackjack. Today, we're brought to you by patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have four stories today.
A baker's dozen.
Starting with our number one, WB Games is up for sale, reportedly. Reportedly up for sale. And this is one that was breaking basically as we were ending Kind of Funny Games Daily last Friday. And so we didn't get to cover it on the show. But it's huge news. This is Rebecca Valentine at gamesindustry.biz. AT&T is reportedly in talks to sell gaming division Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment in a deal that may be worth around $4 billion. According to CNBC, is it really?
Yeah.
That's like four times Beats by Dre, which is wild.
Yeah.
That's how I measure billions.
Exactly. You have to measure by Dre.
Measurements by Dre. According to CNBC, potential buyers include Take-Two Interactive, Electronic Arts, and Activision Blizzard, though nothing has yet been confirmed. WBIE currently owns a number of studios, including TT Games, Rocksteady Studios, NetherRealm Studios, Monolith Productions, Avalanche Software, and WB Games Boston, Montreal, New York, San Diego, and San Francisco, as well as Portkey Games publishing label for games set in the Harry Potter universe. It also acquired mobile games communication platform PlexChat in 2018. The division's output includes franchises such as Middle Earth, Mortal Kombat, and Scribblenauts series, as well as gaming properties that would presumably remain in WB's possession in the event of a sale, such as Batman Arkham, Lego games connected to the Lego movie, and Harry Potter. It also partnered with IO Interactive last year for an unspecified multi-IP deal, though it does not appear to be publishing IO's Hitman 3, which was announced yesterday. And this is, of course, Thursday as of the time this was written. Yeah. AT&T acquired WBIE parent Time Warner in 2018. Tim, this is huge news. Not necessarily when you read it verbatim, because this sounds very, very newsy, but when you zoom out from it, like, this is big. Like, this is huge. Yeah.
No, totally. I mean, like, that's the thing is when Warner Brothers, you immediately kind of jump to like, oh, the Batman games, right? That alone would be a huge deal, right? When you add on the fact that this also includes NetherRealm, this also includes all the Lego games, this also includes, like, the list just keeps going on of these, like, mega hit titles, high selling titles. Like, this, there is a value here for sure, probably to the tune of $4 billion. The big question is, where does this end up? It doesn't shock me that Warner Brothers would try to make this move. They've been kind of trying to hone in the last couple of years on kind of the more Hollywood side of media as opposed to video games, just in the sense of all the different connections they've made, all the different type of, like, trying to, like, get everything down with HBO Max coming out of combining different things and, like, their partnership, or not partnership, but combining with AT&T. Warner Media has become this giant conglomerate, and I can understand them now kind of, you know, a couple of years out from that in 2018 being like, okay, where's our money best spent? Where are we making the most money? And I can imagine them being like, well, video games are, there's a lot of people we have to keep on staff. Why don't we just get rid of that, license out the licenses we have, like Batman, and just print money?
Yeah, I think that's the big question for me is if they sell Rocksteady, if they sell WB Games, right, who is about to announce a Batman game, as we understand it, like, what happens to those games? Do we not get a Batman game anymore? Do we not get that leaked Harry Potter game that was leaked a couple years ago? What happens to Mortal Kombat and NetherRealm? Which in that case, I assume NetherRealm would keep the Mortal Kombat IP, but that does then leave questions for Injustice.
Like NetherRealm, they own Mortal Kombat, so Warner Brothers owns it. If they sold, then yes, Mortal Kombat would go along with it. Batman and all that wouldn't go along with it unless that was part of the deal, which I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. But it wouldn't be like forever. It would just be like Batman forever. But it would have been for the next like Batman game. The things that they've been working on where it's like, okay, cool. Projects that have been worked on prior to X date or whatever, you'll still be able to make. But even that, I don't think necessarily is 100% the case. Like they could just be like, no, we're selling it without this stuff. I just don't think that it would behoove them to do that. Because at this point, if they own the rights, they can just license it and they kind of would make the call on what the pricing is there. And then they would just make money from it.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing that like, if they, let's say they were to sell Rocksteady to EA, I would expect them to want to license that out, license out the Batman property to them to make that game, because that would make the most sense, I think, for all sides involved, right? Like EA would love to have a Batman game. I imagine Rocksteady would probably want to work. Well, maybe Rocksteady is a weird example because we don't know if their next game is Batman. In fact, their next game is probably not Batman. But say their next game was Batman, right? Like that would make sense for them to want to keep that IP they were working on. Or let's just like even point to the WB Game Studios working on the Batman game coming up that we know is happening, right? Like you'd probably want them to hold on to that IP because that's something they're already working on. That's something that is going to make money. That is something that people want.
That's the thing that I think is most important is that, you know, at the end of the day, the bottom line is the dollars, and they're going to look at it, and wherever gets them the most money is where they're going to want to go. WB would already know that these Batman games are successes that are going to make them money. Don't break or don't fix what's not broken. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's already working. So it's like, let's keep Rocksteady working on whatever it is they are, which is probably some DC relevant thing. And then Montreal working on Batman, it's like that would make sense for them to continue that, to keep it going. My bigger question is who's going to swoop in?
Because that's the big question.
Because you look at it and you're just like, okay, they're. I feel like a lot of this is conjecture right now. Of the according to them, the potential buyers, it's like, okay, cool. That you just listed like the biggest guys that are third party, right? So Take Two, Electronic Arts, and Activision. Like Ubi's the only one not there. Electronic Arts, I feel like would be worst case situation.
Honestly, yeah. Like I don't, and this isn't like any shade toward EA, because there are great EA games that have come out over the last few years, right? Like especially from Respawn. Like Respawn is a studio that's under EA that has enough autonomy to where they're able to make great games that aren't necessarily affected by the bigger guys.
Yeah.
If I saw the news that Rocksteady was bought by EA, I would have those goosebumps, like the bad goosebumps of being like, ooh, I don't know how I feel about this. Like, you know, like it could happen and it could work, and Rocksteady could maybe have that autonomy under EA, but you know, like that's not necessarily best case scenario, I think, for optically when we look at that.
Now, I will say, though, to be positive about EA, potentially, EA does have a lot of money. And I think the one thing that they're kind of lacking right now is a focus across their studios in a way that they can present their library at, say, like a press conference in a way that excites us and gets us, you know, kind of caught off guard. Like it's been a very long time since we've watched an EA press conference that we were stoked about. Usually it's like a lot of mobile games. We get the sports games. Then there'll be like the surprise, like, okay, Fallen Order was awesome. Here's the anthem. Here's the, you know, like the bigger titles that we're looking forward to, Battlefronts or whatever. And then there's like the surprise one, like Unraveled, right? Like a Way Out.
EA Originals.
Yeah, like A Way Out was definitely a big surprise and a cool different type of project that we wouldn't expect from EA. But it'd be pretty exciting to be like, okay, cool. We know we're going to get like these type of Star Wars games. We know Respawn's going to do their stuff. Oh, they also have Rocksteady. They all like to know that that's also where we're going to see Mortal Kombat debuts and see like have it all housed.
Honestly, that would be pretty cool for EA. That would be awesome, right? To have that expanded portfolio. And honestly, for EA, I think that would then be the start of them going down that road towards Redemption, which I feel like I'm making it sound dire than it is, because I don't think EA is like the worst company in the world or anything like that. But I think there's just like a certain perception of EA, and like they've not necessarily done themselves favors in remedying that perception. Them buying, let's say, Rocksteady and NetherRealm, like that does so much for their portfolio, because then you have those studios, then you have Respawn, then you have BioWare. Like, let's say if BioWare is able to make a comeback with Dragon Age 4, right? Like, then you then start to redeem yourself in a way where EA isn't looked at the way that we kind of look at EA now, as the sports studio and the mobile game studio and the studio that put out Anthem and like turned mm-hmm. BioWare into something that we don't love as much. And so, yeah, on their side, I think that would be a great move for that. I think Activision would be an interesting one too. Like, that's one that if Activision bought NetherRealm and Rocksteady, and let's say WB Games Montreal, like, that makes sense, I guess. Like, yeah, that'd probably be the least exciting one, like the least like, noteworthy one.
I think both Take-Two and Activision are pretty tied in my mind of like, I don't think much would change. And in good or bad ways, we're just kind of be like, all right, cool, that would happen. You know, there would be some shifts here and there, but especially if Activision, I guess Activision could, you know, leverage the audience and kind of marketing that it already has for things like the Lego games. But I don't think that they necessarily need all those other ones. But some, you know, Lego Take-Two, yeah, exactly. Take-Two though, having, you know, as Take-Two is the weird one, where they have so many heavy hitters, like, but no one talks about Take-Two, right? It's like, we talk about Activision, we talk about EA. Take-Two is just something that like casually comes up, but we talk about Rockstar, right? You know, we talk about 2K, like we talk about the studios more than we talk about Take-Two in a way that I feel is unique to them, right?
Yeah, like Take-Two I almost put in a similar bracket as WB in terms of publisher, where we don't necessarily pay attention to WB as a publisher, but when you think about it, WB has published a lot of great games, right? Like, you know, of varying scales and varying qualities, because they did Mad Max. They also did Shadow of Mordor. They also do Mortal Kombat and Injustice and these different games that a lot of them have to do with their licenses, which are amazing licenses. But yeah, like, as a publisher, Take-Two and WB, I think, are the two that we don't necessarily acknowledge as much as publishers, which I think might actually be a good thing in some regards, because they don't then have the EA problem of everybody seeing an EA game going like, oh no, not an EA game. Yeah. Or like even Activision, I think, has a similar thing of, we see Activision on the box and we're like, oh, okay, cool, like Activision, the Call of Duty guys, like whatever. We don't really have that with Take-Two, which I think is probably a good thing.
That is a good thing. I think I would say WB Games is more similar to Square or like UB.
Interesting.
As a entity than it is to Take-Two. Take-Two just seems so above all of this stuff. Like, when you look at the breadth and the library of content that they have underneath them. But like I said, if they were to get involved in this, it's like, I don't think that necessarily is a bad thing. If at the end of the day, we need people with money that care about these properties for these games to have a chance at being good. And if WB isn't interested in heading up games, they're not the place, as evidenced by the last couple years of us not seeing a Rocksteady game, and who knows what the hell's going on with this Batman game.
Yeah. Do you think first parties are looking at this? Like, do you 100%. Think there's a chance that Sony swoops in and gets Rocksteady?
I think there is the slimmest chance possible, but yeah, of course. Why would they not look at this, man? Like, I really think that if anything, Xbox would probably do whatever it takes to get this. Like, that would bolster their first party lineup, Game Pass, all of that, to such an extent that it would be absolutely ridiculous. But at some point, you really do need to look at the nuts and bolts and dollars and be like, does that make sense at all to put out $4 billion of investment to then take on all of that and need to pay to have that infrastructure going forward to take on all of those new studios? Like, that's a heavy undertaking that it's not just like, who's going to buy it because they have the money and it's, you know, it's available. It's like, there's so much that goes into it that I'm not sure anybody's necessarily ready for right now.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the interesting thing on the Microsoft side specifically, because I'm sure there are conversations going on between the Xbox team and like the higher heads at Microsoft going like, hey, we know $4 billion is a lot of money, but like, and we know we're probably going to lose money on this in some regard, but what this would do for our library is insane. Like, what this would do for our library is bigger than, like, you know, the dollars and cents of it all. Like, we need to be able to buy Rocksteady. We need to buy NetherRealm. Like, that could be such a big move for them. But yeah, like, at a certain point, like, I'm sure those conversations are definitely happening. I wonder if those conversations are, like, continuing and making progress in a way to where it's a reality. Like, that's where I think things might stop, is people at the top going, like, hey, like, we hear you, but, you know, it just doesn't seem worth it from a dollars and cents stance.
Honestly, I that's where I would want them to be the most. Like, I would be most excited if we wake up tomorrow and it was Microsoft buys WB Games. Because to me, that gives them the exclusives that we've been saying they need so desperately. You know what I'm talking about? Like, that all of a sudden it's like, oh shit, if they're exclusive there and they're being built for the Xbox ecosystem, like, that's some baller shit. But yeah, I mean, we'll have to just, you know, keep our eyes on this, because I have a feeling it's not going to be as simple as, oh, in a couple weeks we're going to figure this out and have it done. Like, I think that there's going to be a lot of back and forth and figuring things out, similar to the whole Fox sale to Disney.
Yeah, like, there's just, like, a lot that kind of needs to take place before we see the fruits of it all.
Yeah.
Krijuki writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you can, and says, happy Monday, KFGD. Friday, the news dropped that WB was looking to sell their games division. Could this be a contributing factor to why we don't have a Batman game yet? Could the absence of a Batman game be a sign of why WB wants to sell in the first place? Thanks for your input. Have a great week.
That's an interesting question.
Yeah, I don't
think
so.
Batman game exists. Like, it exists. It has to exist. Like,
yeah,
they've started promoting it. Like, if they hadn't started promoting it, there'd be that question of, like, oh, is it actually, where is it at? No, this game exists. This has to be real. So I don't think that it's that. I think that it is, like I was saying earlier, just WB has a lot of cooks in the kitchen at this point, and I think that they're trying to figure out their best foot forward in this new world of the streaming wars.
Yeah, like, I think I think right now we're at a place where things are progressing so rapidly for a company like WB, as far as, like, streaming, as far as, like, what they want to be as an entertainment company, and as far as, like, COVID-19 and what that means for the profitability for their different entertainment divisions. Like, I think at a certain point, and I think this was from the original report from I originally saw this on Twitter from, like, it was like Cheddar News or something like that. But they mentioned how the market has changed because of things like COVID-19, to where this games division isn't necessarily a thing that is as valuable to them, like, in 2020, which, like, you know, I think that's just a case of how rapidly things move nowadays. And I don't necessarily think the Batman game is a reflection, or us not seeing the Batman game is a reflection of that. I assume we're going to see the Batman game probably in a couple weeks, within the next few weeks, hopefully. Dude, and I know we keep saying this, but, like, it never happens. Yeah, but exactly. At this point, like, it's the WB is on that Jeff Keighley phase one graphic. Like, we know that whatever they have to announce this summer, or they want to announce this summer. And so you imagine that stuff is imminent. You imagine they want to announce it. You imagine that, like, they have something coming out this fall, you would think. And so
let me say something crazy to you, Bless. It's not going to happen. But can you imagine if NetherRealm and TT Games and all these guys become part of PlayStation Studios?
Dude, it's...
That would be the most OP, like, nah, don't do it to him. Don't do it to him.
Yeah, no, that would be ridiculous.
Can you imagine, like, the shots of all the characters and shit, and then there's Spider-Man and Batman?
That'd be hilarious. That'd be one of those ones where, like, you see it happening and you're like, all right, what ritual happened to, like, like, what god did somebody kill in order to make this happen? But yeah, I don't think that's gonna happen, just because, like, I think there's the dollars and cents there just don't add up in terms of where Sony is at, how successful their first party is, and how much they don't need to spend in order to bolster that up. Mm-hmm. But that would be such, like, a big dick moment for them to come out, like, let's say at the launch of the PS5 and be like, by the way, we brought on four new studios and you're familiar with them. It's NetherRealm, it's WB Games Montreal, it's Rocksteady. Like, what an announcement that would be. But that almost be too much. that almost be too much. Story number two, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Xbox has clarified how exactly smart delivery works. This has been an ongoing conversation on Kind of Funny Games Daily as far as what smart delivery is, why it matters, and all these things. And let me tell you, one, they put out a huge blog post. I'm going to read the whole thing just because, like, I think all this context helps for us talking about it. And what
apparently,
the
conversation we got a lot of dum-dums.
But then also,
I'm talking I've about never us, been, by the way.
Well, I've never been wrong about. Well, let me not say never. I have been wrong about this, but I'm going to say for here the most part, what they see here in this blog post, I've been spot on about. I've been comparing it to CrossBuy, and it's
just
CrossBuy.
I don't understand where the confusion can possibly be here.
I'm just
saying.
There's
no confusion. This is so straightforward. But okay, let's read this and see how straightforward it can possibly be.
Again, this is from a blog post from Xbox. They write, "One of the most exciting of the technologies we're introducing with Xbox Series X is smart delivery, which will ensure that you always play the best version of the games you own for your console across generations. This technology is available for all developers, all Xbox Game Studios titles that are optimized for Xbox Series X, including Halo Infinite, will support smart delivery. That means if you purchase the Xbox One version of a supported title, you will deliver the best version of it to your Xbox One as usual. If you decide to jump into the next generation with Xbox Series X, we'll automatically provide the Xbox Series X version of the game at no additional cost when it becomes available. You won't need to do anything in terms of choosing a version to download. We'll take care of all that. And it's not just limited to the games that you purchase digitally. Physical discs of Xbox games can also support smart delivery if the developer or publisher decides to implement it. Below are a few different scenarios in which smart delivery will work across generations with the games and consoles you own now and those you may own in the future. Smart delivery will ensure that only the best version of the game will be installed on your hard drive, so you don't have to manage your storage space. If you own Gears 5 or are loving it via Xbox Game Pass now, you can play it today on Xbox One. Then, if you pick up an Xbox Series X this holiday, all it takes is a push of a button to download it, and you'll have the optimized version of Gears 5 available on day one at launch with the console at your fingertips. When Halo Infinite launches alongside Xbox Series X and Xbox One this holiday, you only have to buy the game once, and you'll get the best version for whichever console you own, or both. If you pick up Xbox Series X for your living room, smart delivery will recognize that and deliver you the optimized version there. If you decide to move your existing Xbox One to a bedroom or the office, smart delivery will recognize that too and deliver that version when you're playing on Xbox One. Lastly, some new and existing Xbox One titles will be optimizing their games after the Xbox Series X launches. For example, if you buy Cyberpunk 2077 when it launches on September 17th, you'll be set to explore Night City on Xbox One. If you pick up Xbox Series X at launch this holiday, you can play it there. You can play it there too in compatibility mode, picking up exactly where you left off. Then, when CD Projekt Red delivers an Xbox Series X optimized version of Cyberpunk 2077, you'll automatically get upgraded once it's available at no additional cost. We're also happy to confirm that smart delivery will be enabled for Xbox Game Pass titles that leverage it. Outside of our Xbox Game Studios titles, it'll be up to the individual developer to determine whether they take advantage of smart delivery. As was the case with our current backwards compatible titles, you won't have to worry about losing any progress either. Thanks to our commitment to compatibility across generations, you can be assured that when you purchase a game on Xbox One today, your game library, progression, and entire gaming legacy moves forward with you if you jump into the next generation with Xbox Series X. But what about the games? Below, you'll find an initial list of new and existing titles that will be optimized for Xbox Series X and confirmed to support smart delivery. Please note, this is in addition to the thousands of games you'll be able to bring with you to Xbox Series X via back compatibility on day one. I like that they're calling it back compatibility instead of backwards compatibility.
Yeah.
On day one. As this list grows in the weeks and months leading up to the Xbox Series X launch, we'll keep it updated to reflect any additions. The games are that, and these are the smart delivery games that are confirmed so far: Halo Infinite, Cyberpunk 2077, Assassin's Creed Valhalla, Destiny 2, Dirt 5, Scarlet Nexus, Chorus, Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2, Yakuza Like a Dragon, The Ascent, Call of the Sea, Gears 5, Second Extinction, and Metal Hellslinger. We hope this gives you a better idea of what we've got planned for smart delivery and how this new technology will ensure that the player is at the center of the gaming experience. We'll be sharing more smart delivery and adding titles to the list above in the coming months. Tim, does this all make sense to you?
Yes, it does. You know what makes even more sense? The tweet that Xbox did. Full checklist on how to unlock all the great advantages of smart delivery. Step one, purchase your game once. Step two, automatically get the best version on your Xbox of choice. Step three, that's it.
This, all I'm saying is this is also what I've been saying forever as far as like how smart delivery is going to work.
Yeah, because what else would it be? Doesn't matter. This is what it is. Let's all get on the same page.
I will say I want to correct myself from an earlier episode because I think one of the things I was saying that was diluting it a bit was I was saying that this would work for, I think, definitive editions or remasters, which isn't necessarily the case. It's just like it's the difference between an Xbox Series X version of an Xbox One game versus like a definitive version. Like, I want to give an example, but I'm afraid I'm going to complicate things more. But GTA, let's say GTA 5 comes out, right? And GTA 5 on Xbox One is GTA 5. Let's say it's GTA 5, the definitive edition with a bunch of perks and all this different stuff. That wouldn't necessarily be the smart delivered game. It would just be the GTA 5 version on Xbox Series X. If they release like a base GTA 5 on Xbox Series X, that would be smart delivery, if that makes sense. That's the one thing I want to correct for myself. I know that itself is confusing, but put it out there as far as like what I've gotten wrong about this. We'll have to see. I'm going to leave that there because I don't want a bunch of comments and a bunch of Reddit posts and a bunch of DMs about smart delivery. So story number three, Star Wars Squadrons has been officially revealed. This is Joe Screbbles at IGN. EA has formally announced Star Wars Squadrons, a first person space dogfighting game set after the events of Return of the Jedi and coming to PS4, Xbox One, and PC. It'll be released for $40 to $39.99 on October 2nd. Developed by Motive Studios, the game will include both a single-player story and multiplayer modes with crossplay support across all platforms and can be played in VR on PS4 and PC. EA will premiere gameplay at EA Play Live on June 18th, which you can watch as part of IGN Summer of Gaming. Multiplayer will take the form of 5v5 battles with two modes announced, fleet battles, which will task each team with destroying the opposing team's flagship, while dogfights will simply ask each team to destroy as many opponents as possible. Locations will be known and unknown, with Yavin Prime and the shattered moon of Galaton, Tim? Galaton. I don't know. Galaton? Galaton. I don't know. Galaton. Announced so far. The announcement press release makes clear that squadron composition will be important, implying multiple ship classes to experiment with. EA also confirmed that while Star Wars Squadron will include cosmetic and gameplay-related customization, all upgrades will be earned solely through playing the game. Tim, I know you and Barrett did your live reaction to Star Wars Squadron. That's up right now on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. And I watched it, and it seems like a squadrons game. It seems like a dogfighting game.
It does, yeah. You know, first person, fully VR compatible on PlayStation. That's pretty cool. The VR stuff in Battlefront was fun for the mission that they had. Since then, we had some confirmation that Walt Williams and Mitch Dyer are returning for the story, for the campaign on this. And I didn't love the campaign in Battlefront 2 because I really thought it was unfocused in the sense of the cameos and everything felt really forced, and I feel like they made a very messy story, especially compared to what we were shown. I think this gives us a bit more option to have more of a self-contained story that I'm excited to see from them, especially with the $40 price point and what they're kind of presenting this game as. Like, I feel like there's less weight on the single-player campaign of it all, but that is kind of exciting to me. Like, I feel like this is one of those things where I don't necessarily think I would have ever asked for this, but I'm happy that it's happening now. Like, I was saying this to Barrett before we started recording, like, I feel like there's this level of Star Wars games where we have these giant prestige titles, but my favorite Star Wars games were when there was 10 of them coming out a year on the PlayStation 2.
Honestly, and yeah,
you'd find some fun here, some fun there, because Star Wars at this point especially, it means something different to everybody. And there's fun to be had in so many different ways, whether it's like deep narrative lore stuff, or it's a lot more action based, or it's you're in space. And I feel like there's the different corners that they can kind of have fun with. And hey, I was too young to really play the X-Wing TIE Fighter games on PC. And then I loved the Jedi Starfighter games. The Rogue Squadron was like great, but not necessarily my jam. This I feel like is something that I am interested in, and that's all that I really need it to be.
Yeah, I'm at that same place, right? Like I'm interested. I'm withholding really any judgment until I see gameplay, because I think that's going to speak volumes in terms of what this game is going to be when it comes out in fall. But like, it sounds cool. The cinematic trailer looked cool. I'm down with the vibe and tone of it. It taking place after Return of the Jedi, like, you know, that seems cool. And like overall, like a 5v5 dogfighting game sounds like fun to me. The $40 price point is interesting, and I think that's gonna be a thing that I'm able to make a better judgment on when I see the gameplay. Because part of me is actually wondering why they didn't go the free-to-play route if this is gonna be a more budget game. Because you imagine that they could have gotten away with going like doing the Apex Legends thing of being like, hey, this game's out, it's Star Wars dogfighting, and it's free, anybody can play it, and they make their money off of microtransactions in loot boxes and stuff.
I feel like that's not what they want from this, though. Like I feel like they have Apex, right? That is that. I feel like this, especially with it having the campaign and it having the same, it seems, same type of campaign as Battlefront 2 had. I think that they're trying to get Battlefront 2 type sales from this. Like they're trying to put out a Star Wars game, even if it is a little cheaper, they want to get that money for it. And they're putting that money hopefully into, you know, everything. Cause the one thing you can't take away from Battlefront and Battlefront 2 is the presentation. The graphics are gorgeous and beautiful. Everything feels Star Wars. The sound is impeccable, right? Mm-hmm. So you take all that and add it to a dogfight Star Wars game, which we've already seen bits and pieces of in Battlefront 2. So if they kind of just expand that, and even from the trailer, like we're seeing things of them like in the cockpit, like messing with power supplies and all that stuff. Like if they make it a bit more of a, not too hardcore of a sim, like, but not too arcadey, if there's somewhere in the middle, I think that this could be like a cool, fun game. And I think that as long as they can justify that $40 price point for single player gamers, I think that this could be a really good bargain. But I think that that's where the free-to-play thing kind of falls apart, where I wonder what type of legs this thing's going to have for multiplayer years down the line. Free-to-play games, I feel like you need to have at this point in 2020, you need to have at least a 3-year plan.
Yeah, you have to have legs.
Or else it's not worth it. You're not going to make your money that way.
And I imagine also, like, coming off of Battlefront 2 and the release of that game, you don't necessarily want microtransactions to be the focus of a Star Wars game, because that fucked up the Battlefront 2 launch in a way that, like, made ripples in the industry. And so if you're coming out with a Star Wars game, I imagine that, like, especially from the Star Wars side and the Disney side, they're probably like, hey, no microtransactions in this game. Like, no, you're not doing that with any of our games anymore. Mm-hmm. And so even from that perspective, I kind of understand why they would go for a premium game as opposed to going the free-to-play route. But yeah, the $40 thing is the main thing that piques my interest. And again, like, this seems like a smaller, more contained game. If it comes out and it feels like it it's worth the price of admission, then I think it's a success. And so I'm looking forward to it. Tim, did you play the Battlefront 2 game on PS2?
Of course.
Do you remember the space battles?
Yeah.
Those space battles were awesome. Just as like an operator, I fucking love those space battles. Totally. I was obsessed with those.
Going back to it, just meant like, remember the time when we had Battlefront, we also had Jedi Starfighter, we had Bounty Hunter,
Episode 1 Racer.
Dude, it was just like they were just pumping these things out. And this leading into the Force Unleashed of the world, it was just like, man, Star Wars games used to just mean whatever. And that was awesome.
Dude, never forget the Star Wars Demolition, which is a game that I feel like whenever I bring it up, people aren't aware of like the ridiculousness and the awesomeness of Star Wars Demolition. But it was like Twisted Metal.
Yeah. I remember the
Twisted Metal
of it.
Star Wars. Oh my God, that thing was awesome.
Oh, they got weird.
Speaking of awesome, story number 4 is our last news story of the day. Niantic is promoting 1,000 small businesses in Pokemon Go for free for a year. This is Rebecca Valentine at gamesindustry.biz. Niantic has announced it'll be offering 1,000 small and locally owned businesses a year of free promotion in Pokemon Go as in-game locations through a new local business recovery initiative. The offer extends to businesses in the U.S., Japan, Great Britain, Canada, and Mexico, with businesses selected appearing in the game as a Pokestop or gym. To be included, businesses must be nominated by players during a period beginning today and ending July 31st, with Very each cool. player being able to submit one location. Quote, we're looking for a diverse set of local family-owned shops that ideally have under 10 employees or just a few locations, said Niantic Civic and Social Impact senior manager Yenny Solheim. Businesses that receive the promotion will be able to wait to activate it until they're able to reopen safely in light of the current pandemic and can use the tools to run in-game campaigns such as raid battles with the intent that the in-game promotion will help those impacted drive traffic and recover. Niantic expects to be able to begin onboarding selected businesses as early as September with plans for flexibility as the situation surrounding COVID-19 develops. This is like a really cool thing. Like Pokemon Go allowing for small businesses to like make themselves Pokestops to get that promotion to like keep themselves afloat is a very unexpected way for I think video games to be involved in the good fight. And so like shout out to them. That's really awesome.
If you would have told me that we'd be talking about Pokemon Go in any way, shape, or form in 2020, I would have never believed you. But here we are. They're still going strong, making good moves, using their platform for good. Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Tim, I can't wait to see the different ways in which video games are able to use their platforms for good. But the future is so far away. If I want to know what games were coming out to mom and pop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Yeah. Whoa. Ken Kevin. Kenneth. Yeah, I was going to say you sound like Ken Kenneth from Connecticut. Out today, we got Robot Island for PC and Mac. Pac? It's probably Pac because they're probably not talking about Tupac. Pac in the tumbling seed box for PC and Mac. Squark, A Nutty Adventure for PC. Barn Finders for PC. Oik. Oik 3D for PC, Grifflins for PC, Lithium City for PC, and Persona 4 Golden for Steam.
Wow.
New dates, and also that Persona 4 Golden thing is wild. It's like, wild. Let me just say that again. That's wild. And I forget if this was a pre-show thing or if I said this at the beginning of the show, but Greg Miller revealing it and me not realizing that he was revealing it, wild.
Yeah, because when I love it.
For context, right, this is a PC game show that happened right after Guerrilla Collective Day 1 on Saturday. And so, like, I tuned into PC Gamer, and it opened up I don't think it opened with Greg, but Greg was there early on in the show, and he appeared in the studio, and he was like, and I'm what's up everybody, it's Greg Miller from a Guerrilla Collective, blah blah blah, Kind of Funny, blah blah blah, I'm Greg Miller, all that stuff. And then he's like, I'm here because I'm gonna reveal a game for the PC Gamer Showcase show. And he like pointed to the jingle, like the jingle played from Persona 4. And in that moment, I felt so many feelings, Tim. I felt betrayal, I felt excitement for people that are finally gonna be able to play Persona 4 Golden. I felt once more betrayal because I did not know this is happening. But also like I was surprised. And so like shout out to that. That's a really cool thing. But yeah, Persona 4 Golden, one of the greatest games ever made, is available on all PC right now for you to play, and it looks even better somehow. New dates. Star Wars Squadrons is launching on October 2nd on PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Jump Force Deluxe Edition is coming to Nintendo Switch on August 28th. Remothered Broken Porcelain is set to haunt your screens August 25th on Xbox One, PS4, PC, and Nintendo Switch. And Azure Striker Gunvolt 2 hits Steam on June 22nd. Deal of the day, Twitch Prime members can now claim bonus free games, Dream Daddy and PictoQuest, while two additional free games will be available over the next 2 weeks. On Friday, June 19th, Mad Tracks will be available via Twitch Prime. And then on Friday, June 26th, Reyes is available on Twitch Prime. You get those again with Twitch Prime. And remember, if you have Amazon Prime, you have Twitch Prime. It gives you these games and a free Twitch sub to give out. Really helps us. So we'd love if you gave that free Twitch sub to us. Remember, it doesn't auto-renew, so you got to do that manually each time. Now it's time for reader mail. You can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Of course, your support means the world to Kind of Funny. Because of you, the audience, Kind of Funny is able to do cool things like launch a new studio, have full Last of Us playthroughs with Nick Scarpino, have awesome guest weeks on Kind of Funny Games Daily, launch shows like the return of PSLW XOXO, and more. You can head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames if you want to support Kind of Funny Games Daily and all the content we produce on this side of Kind of Funny. And you can gain special perks like exclusive content, becoming a Patreon producer, and more. Once again, just go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames to support the show and learn more about what we have to offer. Isn't that right, Tim?
That is damn right. You gotta love it. You just gotta see it to believe it, man. Would you believe there's a post show after every Games Daily and Gamescast? That is hours of content a week.
So much content
exclusive to patreon.com. That's so,
and if you think about it this way, right? Like, each post show is about 10 minutes long, kind of fun of Games Daily. Mm-hmm. 5 days a week, that's 50 minutes of post show. That's a whole show, Tim. That's a whole show.
You're missing a whole show.
Every week, you're missing a whole show.
The post show is when we get nutty.
The post show is when I let loose.
Crazy articles, and we talk shit. There's a lot of shit talk.
I say curse words in the post show. It's wild. It's crazy out there, man.
Bad boy.
I said fuck one time. It was awesome.
Oh my God.
Tim Geddes, are you ready for questions? Are you ready for reader mail?
I am. Let's get to the mail.
Billy the Door writes in and says, hey, gang, there have been some tweets going around saying the Last of Us 2 review embargo was unfairly restrictive. Do you guys agree? Also, in general, what do you think is fair in terms of what can and what can't be embargoed? Thanks, Billy the Door.
You know, this has been a very interesting thing, and I would love to actually have a deeper conversation with more of us involved, maybe on Gamescast. Maybe during the spoiler cast, we'll have a section about this. Because personally, I feel like the review embargoes are designed based on the content itself and making sure that it's not ruining the experience for the intended audience of the review, which is the consumers that want to know if the game is for them or not. And to me, with a game that's as narrative focused as Last of Us, there should be a lot of restrictions. It's kind of like reviewing a movie. There's a lot of restrictions on what can and can't be talked about because it can significantly impair your enjoyment of the content if you have certain things ruined for you. And I feel like that was on my side. My bad.
Oh, okay. For a second, I was like, what is happening?
And it was a motorcycle. Am I being attacked?
Helicopter outside my window.
It'd be like, you know, when you read a review of Avengers, they're not telling you like all the plot beats, right? Yeah. You're usually allowed to talk up to a point, and that feels fair. Like, things based on the marketing materials that we'd already seen, it's like, okay, that's all fair game. But otherwise, I don't know. I feel like it's always one of those things where you don't know until you do. Like, reading the reviews without playing it, you feel like you're being like held back. But then once you play it, you're like, oh, I get why they didn't allow that. That makes sense to me, you know?
Yeah.
And I understand that it's difficult for reviewers to, specifically reviewers that don't like decisions made, to review the game without being able to talk about what they didn't like. But in my opinion, that's on them to figure out a way to come up with how to express their feelings.
Yeah. And I think I'm in that same boat, because for me, the critiques and like the things that I don't necessarily love about The Last of Us Part Two do have to deal with things that are more story focused, or things that are that do change as the game progresses, like later on. And that's the thing that I can't, like, it makes it difficult to talk about the game, but there are also things that I wouldn't bring up in our initial review anyway, because all that stuff is pretty spoilery. And so, like, in terms of, do I think the review embargo is unfairly restrictive? I think it is very restrictive. I don't know if it's unfairly restrictive, because from what I read of the embargo, like, all the restrictions there seem to deal with story events and the way the game changes with story events. And that's stuff that I don't think you necessarily need for a product review. And I think that's where this conversation kind of gets interesting, because for me, when I think of day one reviews, right, or like embargoed reviews, right, like the reviews that are coming out a week before The Last of Us 2 is coming out as a game, I don't necessarily think you need super deep critical deep dives before that embargo. I think the purpose of reviews that are I think the purpose of that first wave of reviews should be product reviews. I think they should be reviews that are touching on, hey, like, as a consumer, is this a game that I should buy or not? Like, is this a game that is worth my money? Is this a game that I'm going to enjoy? What exactly can I expect to get out of this game? I think that is enough for that initial wave of reviews. And I think come Friday, when the game's actually out, and like the weeks to come, I think that's when you should see more deep dives, more op-eds, more think pieces, more analysis in terms of what happened in the game. How do we really feel about all these things? And I think those are things you can talk about in your initial reviews. But like, to the point of the embargo restrictions, I don't necessarily think you need to do like the super spoilerific deep dives in that first wave. And I don't think you know, having those restrictions in the first wave necessarily limit you from making a review later, or doing a deep dive later, or holding a review until the game comes out and being able
or
to fully express that stuff
most
later.
People do now and do review in progress, where it's like, yeah, I feel like this is something that has so many solutions that is on the reviewer's end of, hey, if you don't like this, say that in your review. Say, hey, I feel like I was limited with what I can say. Come back in a week when I'm allowed to give my full thoughts, and like give the rest of your thoughts there. And then, you know, just put like updating and put a date on when it's updating, all that stuff. Like, just be transparent about it all.
And like, and honestly, I like the way that GameSpot did it, because GameSpot is doing that exact thing, right? Like, GameSpot did their initial review where Callie reviewed it, gave it an 8, and talked about at the beginning of the review, she mentioned that like, hey, there are restrictions on this review and I can't say certain things. I will be uploading writing a more deep dive review on launch date, so you can totally understand my full thoughts with context. And I think that's the way to do it. Like, I honestly think that like that is a great, like, I think that's a great case scenario on the side of the reviewer and the audience, right? Especially as an audience that doesn't necessarily want to know all of the details of the story yet, but also an audience that wants to know your honest feelings on a thing, and as a reviewer that wants to express your honest feelings on a thing, right? Like, being having those two waves of, hey, here's my initial impressions. I'm not getting into spoilers, but I'm going to very vaguely tell you how I feel about this thing and why I feel this way. And then later on, like, we're going to have the real conversation about how I feel about specific details of things that happened. Like, I don't think that's a lose situation, really.
Yeah. And I will say, you know, having been a part of many embargoed reviews at this point in my life, I feel like The Last of Us review embargo, like, restrictions weren't that insane. Like, I feel like even this year, there's been multiple cases where we're going into do a review on Gamescast, and before we go live, we all talk to each other. It's like, hey, okay, let's look over the embargo. Let's make sure we know what we can and can't say. And there's been some that are super confusing, where it's like, oh man, like, you can mention this, but like, even with Doom, there was like a bunch of random specific things we couldn't mention, and like, that got kind of complicated. Final Fantasy VII also had some little things where it's like, oh, got to keep that in mind, that seems like a bizarre thing for us not to be able to mention. Whereas with this, I think this was the most simple review embargoes that we've had together, bless, where it's just kind of like, we looked at it, it's like, oh cool, it's really clear what we shouldn't talk about.
It's stuff that we wouldn't have talked about anyway in our review.
That to me is the biggest thing, is that it is stuff that we would have not specifically talked about, even if they told us not to. Because we're not trying to spoil it. And we still would do our review, and we still talked about it for an hour reviewing it and giving our thoughts and able, like, talking about all those things without giving them away.
Jeffrey P. Long writes in and says, hey, Blessing and Tim, nice clothes, which... I like that they're including that in there as if they're watching this live. The Guerrilla Collective Showcase happened over the weekend. There were so many games shown and demoed. I'm just wondering if there are if there are one or two games that stood out, especially to you guys. Personally, I'm partial to Skate Story, but what spoke to you guys? I have plenty of games from the Guerrilla Collective Showcase that I really dug. And Kevin, I have like a bunch of links here that I want to highlight. Yeah. First one of those, actually, I want to highlight Skate Story, because Skate Story looks super cool. It's basically a skate game, but it's super stylish. Looks more linear than something like Skate. But yeah, Kevin, if you could bring it up.
Yeah, I'm sorry. 2 seconds. My mouse is fighting back.
Gotcha. Dude, I hate it when the mice fight back, you know?
Yeah.
Ratatouille. But yeah, like, Skate Story looks super cool.
Sorry.
I actually haven't seen Ratatouille, so I don't know if the mouse fights back.
The mouse does not fight back.
No? Was the mouse not the bad guy in Ratatouille?
We'll have to wait for Ratatouille for that one.
Oh, snap. Snap. Tim, did you catch the Guerrilla Collective? Were there any games that...
I tuned in a little bit. The one that I loved was the Paradise.
Paradise Killer.
Yeah. Where it was a... I just love the style of it. I love the colors. I love the bold outline colors of everything. And the logo is sick.
So yeah, Kevin's showing Skate Story here. And it's basically like, it just changed.
I switched over to Paradise Killer. Last night,
Paradise was killed. Oh, yeah. Okay, well, show Paradise Killer. Can they hear the gameplay trailer?
Yeah.
Okay, because I love the music that's in the gameplay trailer. But yeah, Paradise Killer is essentially like this first-person adventure game where you're exploring and you're trying to figure out who the killer is and you're talking to people. Super stylish.
Kev, get to the end of it real quick. I love the little emblem thing. It reminds me of Halo 2. But yeah, look at that logo. Like, has there ever been a cooler logo? No.
It reminds me of a mixture between, like, it has like the music of a Persona 4, but then also some of the style of No More Heroes. Like, it has that kind of vibe going with it. Looks really cool. Kev, can you go back to Skate Story? Because I want to show that off a bit too. Because, like, basically that looked like Skate if Skate had platforming challenges, which is the thing that kind of vibed with me a lot.
It looks super cool. That we've seen this before. I'm not sure where, but
here it is.
I just love the idea of them being like, let's do something weird with skateboarding. Let's not just do the traditional shit.
Like, look at this. Like, you're basically doing these platforming challenges with the controls to skate, and like with a super awesome style.
Yeah.
So real that cool looks super stuff. Cool. I also want to touch on Calico, which is a game. This is super cute, super like. Like fun looking cat game where you're running a cat cafe. It has like watercolor colors to it. Yeah, look at this. Very, very cute art style. Very kind of chill vibes to it. Apparently you're a witch because you're riding a broom. And there's cats everywhere. And at a certain point in the trailer, you're riding a cat, which is pretty
fun. Dude, cats are the freaking thing of the year, man. I swear to God. I remember in like 2013, every video game had a bow and arrow. Here we are. Every game. Cat.
Every game has a cat. Which is actually like, it's messing me up on my predictions for the year because on Kinda Funny Games Daily, right before the PlayStation, the PS5 gameplay showcase, me and Greg did our predictions, and I think one of the questions was, how many dogs and how many cats do you think is going to be there? And I was on the side of, we'll see at least 4 dogs, we'll see no cats. And so far, 0 dogs, a bunch of cats. Just a bunch of cats everywhere, which is the worst. But, well, not the worst, but, like, bad for my prediction. It's actually been pleasant seeing all these cats. The last game I want to touch on is West of Dead, which is a game that's coming out very soon, like, within the next week soon. And it's basically a twin-stick shooter. Coming out of, I think, Raw Fury.
It's
Raw Fury. Yeah.
This one looks awesome.
Yeah, it looks super cool. This, like,
sick character design.
Again, super stylish. Yeah, Raw Fury. Super stylish art style. Dark colors. You're playing as, like, this skull man who's voiced by Ron Perlman. Actually, I don't know if he's voiced by Ron Perlman, but Ron Perlman is, like, the main voice, so I assume it's him. But yeah, you're going through twin stick shooting. Slowing down time, doing all this dope stuff. Those were my four favorite games from the showcases this weekend, and I can't wait to catch up today to see if I miss anything. Because, like, you know, like catching up on all the showcases over the weekend, it's been interesting to see that, like, one, there have been more showcases than I thought there were going to be. Like, I didn't realize PC Gamer was doing their thing on Saturday, along with the Future Game Showcase, which I think was hosted by Nolan North, which I didn't realize was happening. And so, yeah, catching up on all that stuff and seeing all the different games has been such a cool thing. Now it's time to squad up. Toilet Toads writes in with a squad up on Discord.
What have we done?
It says, quarantine has me missing Magic the Gathering, but I recently learned about a site called spelltable.com that lets you play paper MTG remotely. If any KFBFs want to play some games, Commander, or any other format, I've started a Discord server called Kinda Funny Commander. The link will be in the description for the YouTube video, but you can add Toilet Toads on Discord with Toilet Toads hashtag or pound, whatever, 2134. That's Toilet Toads number 2134. And Toilet and the two T's in Toilet Toads are capitalized. The first T in Toilet and the first T in Toads.
It is
and there is an S.
There toilet, are more than one toads in the toilet.
Toilet Toads. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, where you let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong. Tommy Boy says Gorilla Collective streams are available on IGN's YouTube.
Cool.
Barrett says, reminder that this isn't a decision from WB. AT&T is deciding to sell the games division along with a bunch of other things likely to get out of crazy debt that has grown since their acquisition of WB a few years ago. That's an important thing to note because I think I was talking about their WB as an entertainment company, but AT&T is the one.
Well, technically, it's Warner, so Warner Media.
That is true. Let's see. Oh my god! Of course, there's more smart delivery stuff in here. It's the nano ball. Just so I'm gonna read it just to let it slide. But bless or nano says. Bless, you say smart delivery is cross-buy. While cross-buy is part of it, smart delivery is a blanket term. It includes cross-save, cross-progression, cross-generation, etc. Plus, you aren't buying an Xbox One version of a game and getting the Series X game for free like cross-buy. You are just buying the game and downloading the correct graphics package for the system you choose to download the game to. And I will state that that was not said anywhere. That was not said. They said versions in the thing. And that's all... That's also the argument that me and Greg have back and forth, because Greg is also on the side of you're getting all the assets. I'm not necessarily convinced that it's purely an assets thing, because there's more that goes into an Xbox Series X game than the assets.
I'm with you on that, Bless.
Yeah, like and I see it as
where great. I will say no more.
I don't want to start this again.
Wait, so is Greg wrong?
Listen, you know, I'm not going to say Greg's wrong.
One thing that is right. The one thing that is right is Xbox saying you buy the game once.
You buy the game once. The game. You buy the game once. That's what matters.
That's what's right.
Everything else is semantics and doesn't necessarily matter. I think you're getting a new version of the game. Some people think that you're getting just the new assets. Does it matter? It doesn't. It doesn't matter. Let's not fight about it, people. Just let it go. Let it go. Breathe.
Let it go.
Kebab says the mice do, in fact, bind and get. Okay, well. Okay, well, he's talking about how in Ratatouille the mice did fight back at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't watch Ratatouille, so I can't confirm any of this, but it sounds like the rats were the bad people. Tomorrow or this week's hosts are for Kind of Funny Games Daily. Tuesday, it's me and Imran. Wednesday, Greg and Gary. Thursday, Greg and me. Friday, me and Greg. Of course, this has been Kind of Funny Games Bless. Daily. Each what up?
Just before you go, the food critic was the bad guy. In Ratatouille.
But do we know this, though?
No, we know this for a fact.
Is that how you interpreted it?
I mean, that's Tim's confirming, you know what I mean?
Art is subjective.
Also, right, just before, I know you're about to close out, I just want to say, Tim's hair has been so blonde today.
I fucking hate you.
I wanted to not make a big deal about it, but...
I love Tim's hair on this episode.
Thank you.
Because it has an energy of its own.
Big hair for big week.
Big week. Of course, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, so stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.